Hello and welcome to this episode of That's What She Said, In Theory, Should It Go Well. I've got on the line Nick MacArthur, who does amazing and magical things as a sales coach and as Epic Danger, as you might know him online. And we're going to talk about bravery because he's in like the top three brave people I know of all time, possibly number one at the moment, the jockey for position. And I want you to say hello, and then you hello, like, as an audience. You're saying hello at this moment. And then, Nick, hi.
Hello, hello.
Before we go into the many questions that I have, can you give, like, the briefest but most cohesive overview of kind of who you are and what you're doing at the moment? People aren't like, yeah, I don't know who this person is.
Yeah, I can do that. So I am Nick. I am also Epic Danger. I am a sales coach, awesomeness expert, website critic, branding consultant, guru. I also have a history of I have a history of being a woman previously. Now I'm a dude, so that's exciting. And I write a blog called The Very Best Man as well. That's what I do.
That's rad. I like when you call it history of being a
woman. Boiling it real down.
All right. And then I have questions. Like, I had physical questions, and I was like, no, physical things aren't as nearly as weird as, like, you got to be or get to be both genders in a lifetime, which, like, no one gets to do. And so I have lots of, like, well, what's that like? questions.
It's a trip. It's in some ways, I feel like, you know, most trans people feel like they, it's so unfortunate that they got born this body and they hate it, and I definitely am not a fan of the body in which I was born in. However, I feel in some ways lucky to have gotten to experience both sides of the gender coin. So it makes me a better person, I think.
Well, because the hardest part of I've been working with Nick first as Nikki for years, and every time I saw you, you were pregnant. And so, like, you have so many babies.
So, that's something. So many babies.
So you got to do like the whole, like all the woman things. Like I haven't done that woman thing that hard in the physical world really well. So can you describe yourself as a kid? Like would I recognize you and be like, oh, yep, I see that? Or would you be like, would I be like, no, that's like a completely different human. I don't know that person.
As a kid, you would totally recognize me. I think I am really true to myself. Like, who I am now is very true to who I was as a kid. Anything before, like, age 10. So I was, like, playing with Ninja Turtles and, like, would come home after, like, I'd spend, like, 6 hours in a field collecting stray animals. Truly, like, my house growing up, my mom, well, whatever. Anyway, my house growing up, no one seemed to notice that I would just bring home a new dog or, like, that we had a new cat or whatever, because I just was like, oh, I was in the field and I came home covered in dirt and I brought three animals with me. Hope that's cool. No one notices. Awesome. And I loved Ninja Turtles and I was really, really loud and I was a little bit too much for everybody around me, which is a little bit how I'm just a little more of a nuanced version of that now, I think. But seeing me as like a 10-year-old to like a 25-year-old, you probably wouldn't really recognize me.
Yeah, because I would for sure recognize the person with lots of things to take care of. It's just that you have kids instead of dogs now.
It's true. I just collected children instead.
And they are wonderful children. So right. When was there like a single moment that was like, okay, for sure I'm not a girl? Or was it like a string of moments? Or how did that, because I've obviously not obviously, but like I've never had that experience of like I'm for sure a boy and I'm living this life wrong or differently. Like, what is that like?
I knew it as a kid, so I it was a thing where, like, I have vivid memories of sitting on my mom's front stairs talking to my grandma about, like, I just don't understand why I can't just wear Ninja Turtle underwear. And, like, I don't understand why I have to, like, why can't I just wear what I want to wear? Why do I have to do? And her being like, well, because you're a girl. And I was like, but I'm not. I don't want to be. And her, and, like, in so many tears, being like, well, this is just, you can't say that. You're not allowed to say that. You're a girl, and that's who you are. And the same, I have the same memories of, like, when my dad got remarried, I threw a fit and decided that I wasn't going to fucking go to that thing. Because the dress that they had me wear had so much tulle, and there were gloves, and, like, it was just all sorts of wrong. And, like, it was a hat, and it was very terrible. And, like, even the pictures, I am literally rolling my eyes in every photo from my dad's wedding that there is of me. Because it was just, like, it was, I felt so humiliated. It felt like they were just trying to humiliate me as an 8-year-old by putting me in stockings and gloves and a hat and terrible feathered bangs.
Oh,
but,
wow. So you were super vocal about it. Like, I don't understand.
Oh, yeah.
This is that way.
I was super vocal. Yeah. And then I learned
and then when
that I wasn't allowed to be vocal about it. That I, and I changed the words from I want to be a boy to, like, I'm a tomboy. That's just, I'm not a girly girl. So probably around, like, 7 or 8, I realized that, like, the language of, like, I don't want to be a girl, I'm a boy, wasn't, I might even have been earlier than that, I might have been 5 or 6, I realized that, like, that language wasn't going to get me anywhere. But I could be a tom girl or tomboy, and I could fit in better. I just wasn't one of those girly girls. And so that language didn't get me in trouble. That just made me, I was, you know, fighting my parents, but it didn't actually get me actively in trouble. Whereas, like, I don't want to be a girl, I want to be a boy. I didn't grow up with that so well. So, at some point...
Let you?
Did anyone let me? I mean...
Did anyone let you live as you wanted? Was there, like, any refuge for, like, it's okay to be who you are here, or no?
I mean, no, definitely not. I mean, it was... In the 80s, it wasn't, like, a really... I think, growing up today, I think it would have been fun. I think. Like, I mean, transgender rights and stuff like that, especially in Canada, are pretty, like, no one in Canada has ever said anything mean to me about being trans. No one's ever told me that's weird or gross or anything like that now. So I think that you've come a long way. Like, I feel like being trans is just me being gay here. And so, like, being gay is not interesting anymore. Being trans is interesting, but, you know, like, it's just a new thing. I think it's different in the States. All of my terrible experiences with people have been in the States. So, yeah, I think today it would have been different. But then it wasn't like that, you know. And so I definitely wasn't allowed to be – I was allowed to be a tomboy when it was appropriate.
Yeah, so you found the safe way, which is to be a tomboy. And then when did you decide, well, if I'm going to do this thing, if I have to be in this body, like, as a woman or a girl, then I'm going to be a woman, like, all the way?
I mean, I think that, like, it was a slow process. I think that for lots of it, it was just like, oh, well, this is what I do, and so I'm going to fit in. I think as, like, a preteen and a junior higher and all that sort of stuff, it turned into just trying to fit in because I didn't fit in with the girls. I always did better with hanging out with the boys. But then all of a sudden, the boys were interested in the girls, and so I had to figure out how to fit in so I could be in the right side of things and just, like, not be the weird one, you know? And so I just sort of, like, I learned to like certain types of clothing, and I learned to like the girls that I was in love with, I would just be their best friend instead. And I just sort of fit in. And then I became all Christian-y and churchy, and so you sure as hell have to fit in there. And I think it was when I was, I think it was probably like anytime someone would think I was a boy because I had shorter hair, I would be super offended and super upset with them. And I think the truth was is that I was like, hey, I'm working really fucking hard to be a girl here. Don't you see that? How you found my cover. I don't like this. And so I would get super, like, super upset by it and super offended by it and super grouchy and, like, I would become a dick. But it was mostly just because I was like, hey, I'm working really hard for this cover here and you clearly are not falling for it and I don't like that. So come on now. But I'm like, does that answer the question? I don't know. Then I had a kid.
Yeah,
I got pregnant.
It's like you would crack the code on, like, on all of it. I'm like, okay, well, if I look like this and I dress like this and I just play along, then I pass all the appropriate tests that I can get by. And then when somebody mistakes you for male, you're like, fuck.
Exactly. Because I was trying to pass all the goddamn tests and this is just rude. So, and then I got pregnant because that's what you do. And that's when I was like, okay, I have to do this. If I'm going to have a daughter, I have to do this crap. I have to figure this crap out. And so I grew my hair out long, and I joined the mom groups, and I took her to baby yoga, and I fucking joined the, what, there was like a, and preschool, all the preschool moms had a cool hangout, and I hung out with all the women all the time. I did all the girl things, and then I decided that, like, ooh, I really love having babies. So the way that I kept myself happy was just by continuing to have babies, you see. And then the amount of time that the happiness would last in between babies would get much smaller and smaller. So something had to give.
Yeah. So take me back to preschool then, because, like, when I picture a room full of moms having preschool conversations, like, I am a fairly girly girl, and that's still like, dear God, that's hard. So how did you navigate that?
I have the ability to speak chameleon very well. My empathic ways allow me to know exactly when people are comfortable and when they're not, and when I said something that makes them feel good and when it doesn't. And I know how to, like, I know when I'm passing and when I'm not, based almost entirely on being able to feel the room. And so you just learn to play the game, right? Like, I don't know. You just sort of...
Yeah, but what did that do to your interior life? Did you have an interior life, or did that just have to get kind of...
No, I had all that shut off, remember? Remember I had all that shut off, and you met. I'm like, no, I don't have feelings. No, we shut those down a while ago.
Right, well, that's what I'm getting at, is that... When I met you, I immediately, so it was a serious ship, and I pulled Billy, my best friend, into the other room, and I was like, I don't know what to do with that. I don't know what to do with that. I don't know what to do with that. Because you had this massive, like, shell orb situation around you. But how did that shell orb that was like, I'm not feeling these things, where did that start, and how did that develop along the way? Like, do you know when that started, or was it just like a slow aggregation?
I think it was a slow aggregation. I think that probably, in hindsight, I can look at it and go, oh, it was probably when I decided that I needed to, like, fit the mold better, and that was killing me even as, like, a 12-year-old. And so I think that that's probably when I was like, hey, now, this isn't working. I'm going to have to shut this shit down if I'm going to live this way. And I did. And I did it quite successfully. I think that if I hadn't turned, like, I mean, you know, in hindsight, like, you know now that, like, oh, I want to turn my feelings back on and actually feel that I had some. And that's uncomfortable. But I think that I probably could have gone along doing the exact same thing, having very little feelings, for decades, feeling like, well, these are the things that are supposed to make me happy, and I have them. I have the big house and the fancy car and the husband and the kids, and I have all these things. And I knew that I wasn't happy, but I wasn't excruciating. excruciating and unhappy because I had just turned my feelings off. It was a lot of numbness.
So you had a lot of numbness, and you had babies, and they made you happy, and so
they made me happy. So what more can you want in life?
So what was it like? What was it like to start feeling again, even just a little bit?
I mean, you know, I think the first time I had I'm feeling everyone else's feelings, including my own, because I don't know how to, whatever. One of the people at Seership, who is a really good friend of mine, had intense feelings about something, and afterwards I was like, I don't know how to deal with that because I just want to die, and I don't like it, and I hate you for it, and it's your fault, Kristen, goddammit, and I don't like these feelings bullshit, and it's super uncomfortable. It's super uncomfortable to actually feel your feelings. But as time goes on and you get more comfortable with feeling your feelings, you can actually let them guide you to change your feelings into happiness instead of angst and sorrow and pain. But if you don't have your feelings turned on, you don't have that inner compass towards happiness, you know?
Yeah, so that leads us right to your feelings start to turn on. And it isn't like the pretty picture where you're just like, oh, I have these kids and this husband and life is fucking perfect. The end. It kind of did the exact opposite.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, I'm full of resentment and anger and unfulfillment. And that's not fair because my husband actually is a really decent guy and he is nice and kind and whatever. I mean, it was not like our marriage was perfect. For many reasons, the part where I was attracted to women was one of them, and it's just a small factor. But like he's a nice guy, you know, and so I shouldn't hate him like this. This is not fair to him. This is, you know, like, okay, well, something has to change. And I think that I had made it about it was his fault. He needed to change. And the truth was that it was just as much my fault. And I needed to change, but I needed to change more than, like, just the way our relationship was structured or his working hours or whatever. I was like, oh, I really am interested in vaginas. This is a problem for our marriage. I don't know what to do about this. And then I fell in love with somebody and was like, oh, okay, yeah, I really am. Uh-huh. This is not just theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, something has to give. And then everything
gave. Yeah, so you went from being married with four babies to being divorced and then remarried in the space of how many months?
So, it was 17 months. Yeah.
And how, when we're talking about, so the whole reason that I'm talking to you is because of Brave. Did it feel like,
mm-hmm.
did any of that feel brave, or did it just feel like, no, this is what has to happen?
I mean, all of it felt brave. I think in hindsight, if I look back on things, I guess, the braver thing to do, I don't think I was my biggest, bravest self. I think I was still really big and brave, but I wasn't my biggest, bravest self. My biggest, bravest self would have left my husband before having fallen in love with somebody else. My biggest, bravest self would have done it a little more gracefully, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I should have left before. It seemed really hard and undoable, and I convinced myself that I will figure out how to be happy. I just need to figure out how to be happy. And the problem was that I couldn't quite come to terms with the fact that the only way that I can be happy is not here, and the only way that he can be really happy eventually one day is with me not here too. I wasn't brave enough to do that because I had kids, and I mean, I think when I realized it, I was already pregnant with my fourth kid. And so I was a stay-at-home mom. Well, I'm not a stay-at-home. I was a work-from-home mom. He made way more income than I did. And what would happen to our kids and what would happen to our life and what would, you know, and I think I convinced myself that I was doing the best thing for all of us. And the truth is the bravest thing to do would have been to leave then, and I didn't do that brave thing. But I did, I mean, I could have, I think I could have been way less brave, and I could have, you know, fallen in love with Anna and just carried on with my life and either not pursued the love of my life at all, or I could have done it in a really sneaky, terrible way that would have been even more hurtful and whatnot. I could have done things a lot less brave. It was terrifying, you know, to leave my husband and have to completely support myself and kids and to move out of my nice big house and into a much smaller rental and to get rid of my nice fancy car and drive a minivan and to amp my business up to actually support myself instead of just doing it. I mean, I made decent money. I made more than I would have made in like a regular office job, but I didn't make enough to support myself and four kids previous to leaving my husband. And so there were a lot of really uncomfortable, brave things that had to happen.
Yeah. And then shortly after you started your relationship with Anna, you decided to transition. And how did that, there's so many questions around, like.
You're right. That was also really brave.
Right, but I imagine that it's like a cliff, like that's a there's no going back sort of place. And so what pushed you off that cliff versus like I could just sort of stay in this zone where I present as male to male.
I mean,
people,
I could have been
but it's okay.
Yeah, I could have been a very androgynous butch lesbian. I could have totally done that. And I think that would have been the comfortable place for Anna. I think it was a lot of little conversations. It was a lot of like, I'm noticing that this feels good to me versus this. I'm noticing that this feels good to me instead of this. I'm noticing that this feels good to me over here instead of this. And her being like, okay, I can do that. Yeah, okay. And then like being like, no, actually, I don't want to just be androgynous. I truly feel like I'm a man. Like, I always say that, like, the moment you have one, like, little, like, okay, I remember deciding that I was going to get rid of all my women's clothing. And so I came home and I emptied my closet and I felt so good to be like, okay, I have 8 articles of clothing, but I feel good in those articles of clothing. This is the ultimate capsule wardrobe. And that felt really great. And then, like, 2 weeks later, it was like, okay, that's not enough. I need to do this other thing. I don't even know what it is right now off the top of my head. But, like, okay, that's and so it was a thing where, like, I would get this next little bit of masculinity or this next thing that felt good, and then all of a sudden I would be even more hungry for the next thing. And it was a thing where, like, okay, it probably took 4 months, maybe 6 months of working. We had a couple of therapists, Anna and I, that we just were looking up therapists in Calgary for LGBTQ couples, and our therapist came up, and it was great. And it turns out, like, 6 months in, that, part of a very large portion of her clients are people that she's helping transition. And so that sort of, like, it was like, oh, okay, But I didn't know that until I was like, so... I think that I'm a man. And she was like, well, I've been waiting for you to say it for about 4 months now, so good job. Like, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, it was definitely more like she had already seen all the signs. And it was funny because Anna was like, so you're just going to, like recommend, because she put a referral into an endocrinologist for me to start hormone replacement therapy. And Anna was like, but shouldn't there be, like, a test or something? Like, don't you have to, like, isn't there very intense surveys and, like, psychoanalysis and, like, and and our therapist was like, I work with trans patients every single day, and I've been working with you for 6 months, like, weekly. I don't need a test for this. Like, I could have told you this month ago. But if you want me to, like, ask you some questions, but you feel like it's official, like, I could. And it was just a really, like, oh, okay, someone else from the outside that sees us all the time is pretty, like, who's just waiting for me to say the word, you know?
Yeah, and like saying cancer,
saying the words,
like,
is scary.
To the lab. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, this, I'm like, oh, do I have different blood makeup? Can you just test this? Just take a sample, and then we'll know for sure. There's no definitive, you're this or you're that. And even on the trans spectrum, it's a spectrum. Like, lots of people feel more gender fluid, but they identify more on the masculine side or more on the feminine side. The trans world is very, it's really fluid. I mean, Anna would have really preferred if I had stayed identifying as androgynous. She has a really very much grieved the fact that she is queer. Like, okay, she went from being in a queer relationship where we were lesbians to, like, from the outside looking in, no one knows. It's like part of her identity's gone missing. It's like, if all of a sudden, I don't know, she wasn't smart anymore. People could, like, I don't know exactly what part of her would be feeling missing, but I think everyone identifies themselves as certain things. And being bisexual was one of the things that she identified as. And now we were in this wonderful queer relationship where it was like people saw us and you walk through and you're like, oh, you're my people. And you see people in the store and you're like, yeah, we know each other because we're like, do you know that Jeep people, whenever they see each other driving, they wave to each other because it's like, it's the Jeep family. It's kind of like that with the queer family. But now no one sees us and thinks we're queer. Everyone thinks we're just a heteronormative couple. And a little bit of her identity is lost in that, which is hard. And, I mean, a little bit like she fell in love with me as a woman and she misses my voice, and which is not, does not sound the same anymore. And she misses my smooth skin. And there's lots of things that she misses. She misses, her book club in Portland is all women, and that was great because she could bring along her partner. And now I don't quite fit in that spot anymore. So there's just lots of things that are different for her. And I love her so much that if she had asked me not to transition, I probably wouldn't have. Fortunately for me, she loves me enough that she would never have asked me not to transition. So, scary. It's scary to know that, like, oh, this could make me lose the person that I changed my whole life for and that I loved more than anything. Because, I mean, if you look at the statistics of relationships, it's not great for people transitioning. They don't last, and people become different. And our therapist says that often happens because people aren't transitioning as a couple. That it's like, oh, I secretly have been dressing up as a woman for 20 years of our marriage. Now I can't do that anymore. I've started therapy, a hormone replacement therapy. Jump on board, and that's very different than the way that it happened for us. It was very much the two of us making decisions together and exploring things together, and yeah.
Yeah, so
not
what
sure.
has
I'm
been...
I'm way off the topic there.
No, it's okay. So that's been, like, way harder than anticipated in terms of the not thinking... I wouldn't necessarily think, like, to do that, you have to do it as a couple, and then there's so much that goes into that. But what has been not as hard as you thought about this whole the process that you're still undergoing, but sort of the whole mm-hmm. transition process? What was like, oh, that's probably going to be hard, and then you were like, actually, it's not so bad.
I think, like, lots of things that were really hard at the beginning have become not hard now. So, like, things like using the men's bathroom. When I was androgynous, I think it was 10 times harder because I didn't know what bathroom to go in, and no matter where I went, I was screwed. And now, I'm gendered as male by strangers, I don't think I've been misgendered for like months now. I just go into the men's bathroom and it's no big deal. It doesn't stress me out. It doesn't whatever. And I think that 6 months ago, I couldn't have imagined that there was a time that I could go into the men's bathroom without feeling like dying, or going into any public bathroom without feeling intense anxiety and stress and So there was a turning point on that for me in that situation. But that is a lot easier than I thought it would be. What else? I am surprised at how quickly my male privilege has like reprogrammed.
Yeah, so talk to me about that, because I'm all like,
that's fucking interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's the thing where, like, as much as, like, okay, transgender people are a disadvantaged group, and if you look at the, like, looking at mental health statistics, looking at average income, looking at so many things, the transgender community is really disadvantaged in so many ways. But once you pass as male, truly, my life is just people listen to what I have to say more. People expect that when I talk, it will be important or of interest, and they listen in a way that didn't happen when I was female. People just respect you more. People think that I make more money than my wife, even though she crushes me on her income. People bring the bill to me. People compliment me on having such a beautiful wife. And you start to like expect that people will listen to you when you talk now. It's this thing that like I used to expect that I would have to fight really hard, and I would have to have really thought out my argument before speaking about something, because I only had one chance if someone was going to listen, and you better fucking make it count. And now I can just talk about anything, and people just take it as like, well, that you said it, so it must be true. Which is really fucking scary, right? Like when you think about it, you're like, that's not right. But it happens. It's the truth. And so I don't have to think about using my words more wisely anymore. I don't have to control my temper or my emotions anymore, because when you're a woman and you have extra emotions or temper or whatever, you are seen as being hysterical and just being a worked up girl. And whereas when you're a man and you're passionate about something, you are seen as being passionate about something, and you're mad as hell, and you have every right to be. Like, it's a really strange, strange thing.
Incredibly strange. And is that the biggest difference between living as a male and living as a female, or is there something that's even bigger than that? Aside from physical differences, but like living in society differences, what's been the biggest surprise there?
I think it's a combination of, I didn't realize that the testosterone and the biological makeup of my body would make me feel it's way easier for me to say what I want. I feel as though my wants are absolutely more urgent than they were before. Previously, it would be like, well, this is what I want. But I mean, it's not, I can do without it. I'm not even going to ask for it, because I should, like, you know, everybody has things they want in life. Whereas now I'm like, well, this is what I want, and I'm at least going to tell you that it's what I want. And like, I'm not going to feel bad about wanting it. Whereas before, I definitely was like, oh, I would like this thing. And I feel just guilty and ashamed for wanting so much and being such a greedy person. And now I'm like, well, of course I want this thing. And even if I can't have it, I'm at least going to tell you that I want it. Yeah, I'm going to let you know that I'm upset that I can't have it. God damn it. I think that it's actually more like a biological chemical makeup of my body than it is nurture.
Huh.
Because I noticed the difference much earlier on than what society is treating me. I noticed the difference before I was being gendered as women most often.
Fascinating.
Really, super fascinating to me.
So when we talk about you in sales and selling things and helping other people sell things, what does it look like to be brave in sales for the peeps that you work with?
I mean, I think it is really different depending on, like, I've noticed it's really different depending on gender. So I have, now that I'm a guy, guys actually work with me now, which is a thing that didn't happen before. Previously, I'm like 99% of my clients were female. And if I did have a male client, it was a fight the entire way because innately they knew better than me because they had a dick. And now, I would still say that like 80% of my clients are female, but I do work with men often now. And it's alarming to me how I have to, like, there's very different things that I have to say to women in sales. The women with sales, 98% of it, is just that they don't actually believe that they're worth the thing, the money that they're asking for something. Even if that money is a dollar, they don't believe that, like, oh, I couldn't, like, I don't know. And they're looking for someone to tell them and convince them that they are good enough to ask that price so they can believe it and so they can say it out loud. With men, it's about, okay, I need to teach you how to alter your language in a way that doesn't feel so cocky and confrontational and elitist so you can actually sell someone on something. With women, it's about, I need to teach you to be more confident and more cocky and more elitist in order to get you to sell something. And so, depending on who I'm working with, is very much the difference in how I teach people how to be brave. So, and with men, I am teaching them to be brave by being vulnerable. And with women, I am teaching them to be brave by being ballsy. It's a very different thing. I mean, I had a client the other day that really, like, it hit me mostly because they just weren't sure that they were actually, they should even be doing this. Were they even good enough to be calling themselves a photographer? And, like, their work was great. It wasn't like, they're not Jonas Peterson. They're not Sam Blake yet, you know, but, like, they have good work that is, they are, were not charging anything there. And very, like, they deserved more than what they were giving themselves credit for. And, like, really all she was hiring me for was to tell her that. Because now that she has that confidence, she feels like she can go out and actually charge even what she's currently charging, you know?
Yeah.
And teaching them language around that. I mean, you always say that I'm the best salesperson you've ever met. And the truth is that I was always really good at selling other people's things. I always had a really hard time selling someone. As a photographer, I could, once they had booked me and they had paid their session fee, I could sell them $3,000 in photos because I had created the product and I was selling the product at that point. I wasn't selling myself anymore. But getting people to put down the money on the session fee was really difficult for me because I was making them take a chance on me. I was selling them myself. And so I can understand, I've been in that spot where I didn't feel like I was good enough to even ask that, you know? But I can sell,
yeah.
I can sell seats to anyone else's thing, no problem. I can sell you a physical product all day long because I have confidence in those things. But selling myself was really hard. And now I don't have a problem selling myself. I'll just say, I can do this for you and I can do this for you. And if you want those things, then great. Here's the dollar amount that I'm in charge. And it's more than everyone else, but I'm better than everyone else, so it's fine. If you don't want those things, then go spend half the money with someone else and come back and spend your money with me in 6 months anyway. But I'm good. Either way, I'm happy. I couldn't have done that previously.
Yeah, I find it interesting that it's gendered because I have no male clients. And it's not because I've never said, like, dude, only the ladies come to me. It's because dudes won't come to me because I'm not a dude. The end.
And here's the thing, that what I've noticed from being in the locker room, so to speak, is that it's not even it's not even because you're not a dude. It's because how strong of a woman you are is very threatening to men. They just, you have to be a very secure man to there's some sort of like weird socialization that's happened that like strong women are scary to men. And you have to be really secure in yourself as a man to allow yourself to work with a strong woman and let her dominate you. Because everything that society has told men is that they should always be the dominant ones when it comes to women.
Mm.
And so it takes a lot. I mean, Anna always jokes about how, like, she hadn't dated anyone for years. And I'm like, yeah, because that's because everyone thought you were straight. And she's like, well, I wasn't. I just, I'm like, yeah, I know, but everyone thought you were, and you were way too strong of a woman for most men to step into a room with, because you do not put up with shit, and that is a scary thing, because men are full of shit, and I am a man, I am, that is my chosen gender, even though it makes Anna somewhat furious sometimes, because she's like, but sometimes men are the bad team, and I'm like, I know, but sometimes they're the good team. It's like saying that, like, sometimes white people are the bad team, often. Turns out all white people aren't terrible still, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. I just got on a weird tangent there. I'm not sure. Anyway, but it's difficult for men to submit to women. It feels unnatural in some sort of strange way. It's scary.
Yeah. No, thank you for that insight.
I'm like, if you think of your clients who are dudes, they're probably some of the very best dudes you ever met, right? When I think of, like,
yes.
When I think of the dudes that you work with, I'm like, ooh, they're the best dudes that I know. Yeah. That's my tangent.
No, it wasn't a tangent at all. Yeah, because they're not afraid. They're just a whole human, and then other whole humans are willing to work with whole humans, and then it's less about,
yeah.
Like, but you're a girl.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of women don't want to work with men either because they feel too intimidated. They feel like they can't be themselves. It doesn't just go like, oh, men don't want to work with women because they're assholes. It also goes, women don't want to work with men because they're not secure enough. It really does go both ways. There's this whole gender thing. It's like this crazy mind-blowing thing. I'm like, I'm going to go back to university and take gender studies because this shit's crazy. And the way we communicate is very different, and the way we feel safe is very different, and most men don't know how to make women feel safe, and most women don't know how to make men feel safe.
Well, you can just enlighten me. How do women make men feel safe, but how do men make women feel safe?
I think part of it is just that women have been socialized to feel like men are going to think that they're silly little women, whether that man is doing that or not. So it's kind of, part of it is just having to go in with the understanding that, like, oh, you have certain prejudice, whether you want to or not, because you've been trained that way. And going in knowing that, like, your client has certain prejudice because they've been trained that way. And so if you are a man working with women, you have to make sure that they know from the very get-go that you respect them and that you think that their input is valuable and that they're not silly and that their feelings aren't silly. And if you are a woman working with men, you have to go in letting them know that, like, I don't know what you have to do. I think the men just have to get over it. But I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to make men feel safe. Yeah. I got nothing. I'm like, I think that men just have to get over their shit. I think that it's the spot where men have to grow, and I think that women have to grow in their confidence as well. I don't know. But I know, as I'm now being gendered male, that, like, part of what I have to do with my clients is let them know that I don't think that they're silly and I don't think that their feelings are stupid. And I do think that what they have to say is important, because all of a sudden I have subconsciously switched in their mind from being on the safe female side to being on the slightly intimidating, scary man side. So if I don't go in and let them know that I think that they're valuable and what they have to say is important and that I'm listening and that their feelings aren't silly, then I've lost from the very get-go. So dudes, if you want to work with women, let them know that they're important and what they have to say is important and that their feelings are important and that they're not silly. But not in a patronizing way, because that's terrible also. It's tricky. Because I don't think that you need to know, Kristen, that what you have to say is important, that your feelings aren't silly. You are not the kind of woman that has that issue. And Anna is not the kind of woman that has that issue, but many, many women are. So knowing you, I think it's just like any other social interaction. You have to know your audience as well.
Of course, I think that's a good insight. So are you ready for the lightning round?
Yeah.
Okay, so in general, you wish you would see more blank in business.
More bravery, but I know that that's so corny because that's your thing, but I think it's true. People being a little more ballsy, taking more risks. I am a little less safe.
I like ballsy. I like that
ballsy.
as a word. Pie or cake?
No. Pie.
Coffee or tea?
Tea in the evening, coffee in the morning. If I have to pick just one, tea.
Well, yes. I mean, yeah, I get it. I was going to say Trudeau or Trump, but then are you secretly smug that Canada is now the world's conscience and you have the best leader in the free world?
I am not secretly about it at all. I am overtly smug that you're amazing. I'm all like, the suck an egg. Yeah.
For you, being brave means blank.
Being honest.
And being brave does not mean blank.
Hiding.
What gives you hope for humanity?
People stepping in front of the underdog and saying, nope, not on my watch.
Are there any regular brave practices you do? Or just like shit that makes you feel brave?
Rock climbing makes me feel brave, but then you break your ankle doing it. You shouldn't do that. I don't know that there's any, like, regular, like, rituals or things like that that I do.
Okay. What is next for you and your work? Is it shape-shifting or is it kind of hanging steady at the moment?
Ooh, I was thinking about the last one. So I think the one thing that I do is that when I'm not feeling brave and I know that I need to be brave about something, I go and I look for who my being brave would help. So if I'm needing to be brave about being open about being transgender, then I go and I look at all the, like, there's 1,000 trans groups or YouTube channels or whatever, and I go and I will look and be like, okay, these, the 17-year-old kid whose parents are making them wear dresses to school and won't call them by their preferred pronouns and names, I need to be brave because one day their parents might read something that I write and understand their kid better. If you go and you find the people that will actually be helped by your bravery, it's easier to be brave because there's a space to it. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's fucking genius.
Yeah, so I spend a lot of time when I'm terrified of going and, like, looking at people who should be more terrified than me, because they're going through the same thing as me and they don't have the same support system that I have. So that's how I do it. If you can put a human face to it, you do it. And then what am I doing next? I think, what I do is always shape-shifting. What I do to make money is and support my family. I think it's staying pretty consistent in sales coaching and brand consulting and basically helping people be themselves with their business and teaching them how to sell more shit. And then how my personal stuff, I think, will shapeshift. I'm super interested in speaking about gender and how different genders have to communicate differently. I think I'm a very passionate feminist now all of a sudden. My new, like, oh, now that I know how terrible I had it, I really need to be more passionate about this shit, because just because I don't have to deal with mansplaining and, like, my work being decided by the way that I look and how many children I can bear, it doesn't mean that I can just walk away from these people. I'm like, well, I'm on the other side now, so suck it. Like, it doesn't mean that I can do that. I'm way more passionate about feminism now than I was a year ago. And so probably something to do with that I could see creeping up quickly. And then writing at the very best man is the thing that I need to carve out more space for. But that's what's happening with me.
Where can people find you on the onlines? Or where would you like to for people to find you?
People can find me either at epicdanger.com or any sort of Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever. Everything is Epic Danger. Or you can find me at theverybestman.com.
Rad. Is there anything that you wish I had asked or covered or talked about or been like, no, we really need to talk about that?
I'm going to tell you that leg hair is not all it's cracked up to be. That's what you should know. The thing that I will leave you with is that it gets tangled, and sometimes it gets hurty, and it's, I don't know that I'm going to keep it around.
I wondered. I saw that in your Instagram photo, and I was like, that's a lot of leg hair. That's got to be different.
I am turning into a hairy beast of a man, and in some ways it's great. In other ways, it gets like tangled in your socks and matted. You know, when you've had long hair, I'm sure at some point in your life you've had long hair. And you know when you wear it up on a ponytail really like all day, and then you take your ponytail out and it makes your head feel all like, oh, and it kind of hurts a little. That's how leg hair feels when you take your socks off.
Weird.
So men have been suffering in silence for years and they didn't even know.
Yeah, they just didn't know any different because they have the hairy legs. Who knew?
So,
Nick is rad. He's coming to speak at Brave because that's a thing that you can do. You can just ask people to come and they'll speak. KristenKelf.com.
That's what
Brave
you do when you run that shit. Oh, I talked about
No, it's okay. We're good. We're rolling.
Say it again.
KristenKelf.com/Brave. Nick is speaking. It's going to be amazing. And I will re-meet him there because every time I see you, it's different and you're further along in the path of all of this goodness.
That's true. You should come and hang out and we will maybe even drink whiskey together. I'm not promising because Kristen might have some rules about alcohol. But if she doesn't, then I will drink whiskey with you and maybe even let you see my leg hair because I'm a generous man like that. I'm all about consideration.
I think that's fair. I think whiskey for all is a fair thing to promise. That's acceptable.
I don't know. I don't know what the rules are. And I'm like, what if you were like, oh, God, I booked a dry venue. I'm so sorry. Take it back.
No, it's okay. So thank you for listening, guys. I'm going to hit the magical stop recording button. But KristenKelf.com/Brave because you want to come to Brave. And you know it.